Logistics. Today on Returnal Podcast, I want to talk about logistics because the game is changing, friends. Gone are the days where we can send a full container every 6 months just to Amazon FBA and thrive in an omnichannel world. Amazon fees, especially when it comes to storage and moving product from one area of the country to another, are increasing for most of the brands that I represent here at Seller Accountant. And honestly, just having better supply chain visibility and better management of that supply chain is really crucial. And so I don't know if you guys ever do this, but you know, if you've ever ordered anything on like HelloFresh or one of these food services, they may have an MVP list, right? Or a Hall of Fame list where you go back and you look through all the different meals that you could acquire, and these got the best reviews. And so I actually went back and found one of my first guests from several years ago when we started Returnal Podcast, co-founder of My FBA Prep. His name's Taylor Smits. The guy's a monster in the space. He has not only built his own 7- and 8-figure companies over the last 5 years, he's an incredible operator, but he is knee deep in this: how do we improve the technology, the fulfillment, the customer experience when it comes to our logistics as Amazon continues to give us more incentive to build a more sophisticated internal process. And that doesn't necessarily mean we need to go buy a warehouse, right? And so in today's interview, I'm going to kind of go there with Taylor. Hey, what has changed in the last 2 years? What's going on now in the logistics space? And what are some best practices that 7- and 8-figure brand owners out there need to be employing to keep up and stay ahead as we go into 2024 and beyond? So hope you guys enjoy this interview with Taylor Smits, My FBA Rep. It's time to maximize profitability and cash flow. It's time to learn habits and hacks from the best e-com CEOs. It's time for Return on Podcast with me, Tyler Jeffcoat. All right, today on Returnal Podcast, I'm excited to return. You guys are going to love this. A little inside baseball here. Return the first guest that Returnal Podcast ever had that wasn't me. So if you go back to the like, episode 1, Tyler. Episode 2, Tyler. Episode 3 was my friend here, Taylor Smits, the co-founder of MyFBAPrep.com, logistics guru, all around awesome dude. Really excited to have you back on the show here after 2 years. Taylor, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing great. It is awesome to be back. And I've seen that many of the people we know in common you've had on your podcast since then. So it's awesome to see the growth you've had on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate some of those connections you actually made. It is kind of funny. We were talking about Taylor, you and I have so many friends in common. And at the end of the day, there's a lot of data, right? Like you have APIs getting data for your warehouses. I have financial data, but at the end of the day, this is still a relationship business. And one of my mentors always said, your net worth is your net work. And I'm incredibly grateful for having guys like you in my life that want to do things the right way, want to win the right way, want to grow. You still in Mexico, by the way? I was going to ask you that. Are you still down there in Mexico?
Yeah, most of the time I'm in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico. Actually have one of my co-founders and his wife are in an apartment in my building now. They spend a couple months out of the year here. And then we fly back to California. We fly to Texas when we got to do warehouse visits, Georgia, et cetera, et cetera. Yep. There's another part of our team who covers like the Northeast and the Southeast, but pretty quick for me to get back to the warehouses for the on-site and get your hands dirty work. But yeah, I'm mostly in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
Love it. So when we spoke last, we were really talking about this explosion of an additional layer of logistics needed for Amazon sellers. You and your team, founded this incredible, honestly, incredible solution out there, My FBA Prep. Would you just give me kind of the quick, hey, here's the state of the union. Here's how things are going. Like, I'm going to be honest with you. Like, just to tee this up, 2023 was actually a really challenging year for my company because of some of the tailwinds that made you and I excited in 2020, 2021, 2022 became headwinds in 2020. Into 2022, beginning of 2023. I'm just curious, like from a logistics perspective, how's it going, man? And kind of what's the state of the union with your company that's, I know, grown a ton since we spoke last?
Yeah. So I'll start with the company and then I'll get into sort of the state of the union. We've nearly tripled in size. over 100 warehouses globally. And
Wow.
the new additions are really Canada. The UK has become much bigger for us. And now we're getting into Mexico. And what Mexico looks like is taking American brands who are interested in the Mexican marketplace, Central America and South America. We had one aggregator who's based in South America who worked with us actually in Georgia that we're looking at doing their logistics and supply chain in Mexico. So we're continuing with the international expansion, but not for the sake of international expansion, but rather our clients, most of whom their number one marketplace is Amazon in the US,
right.
But they say, hey, can you help us here? So that's what dictates where we go. But so that's been amazing. I mean, since we last spoke, I don't know what our revenue numbers were like then, but we're over 8 figures a year now, which is great. And you know, it's really been a story of growth in spite of the 2023 sort of pullback. You know, 2022 was strong for everyone in e-commerce. 2023 was like, hold on to your hat. Who knows what's coming?
That's right.
So we're lucky to have, you know, made it through that. And 2024 is looking really bright for us. Really what's happening now is we're getting less of the clients that we started with, which are really entrepreneurs who have a brand. Maybe they started with a handful of ASINs. They gained some traction in a particular niche and mm-hmm. then grew it up. And, you know, in those instances, it was typically the CEO still managing the companies and working with our team directly as they go. We still get that. We still have some sort of legacy customers who fall into that category. But what we're seeing now is a lot of bigger brands that people have heard of. And I'll share with you a few that we've done some PR with that I know I'm allowed to say. The first one, though, I thought this might be a fun quiz for you. Since you're a college football fan, what college football coach has a sunglasses sponsorship?
Wow. Oh, it's got to be Deion Sanders, right?
You nailed it. So maybe. Deion Sanders is sponsored by Blenders. There's a lot of fun to that backstory.
Okay.
But ultimately we've won the Blenders account, for their Amazon work. And we really, you know, that's just an example of a brand that, is larger as a household name. I think they started in 2012 or 2013. They have a great story going Amazon first and then, getting into retailers and doing a lot more sort of traditional partnerships. Deion Sanders would be, you know, maybe the best example of that everyone's heard of. But we're leveling up with, brands like that. And I'll just say one more, and I'll tell you why this one is particularly interesting to me. I'll also say at the outset, I don't know who I'm about to talk about. His name, the company is Truvani, and the CEO who started it is Derek Halpern. Derek Halpern used to be the number one internet marketer in the world. And that sounds like smoke and mirrors kind of stat. But if you look at back in the day when he was teaching internet marketing, all of the, let's say, third-party platforms that you sell through, which today would be like Stripe, but this is before Stripe existed, they ranked him as number one. And that's by the volume that they see and the revenue they see. So the reason why this is such a fun client for me is I came across Derek through e-commerce, through a mastermind that I'm in. And he was actually a keynote speaker talking about Truvani, which is the brand that we serve. And Truvani is basically a supplement company that really, really cares about the ingredients and doing things the right way and building the company the right way. And so I was a fan of the company on the side and didn't connect the dots until after they'd been a client for a couple of months that, oh my goodness, this is Derek's company because we work with his team. And I don't know, I hadn't put that together. So at my FBA prep, we're growing with sort of larger clients now that that make it interesting. And our value proposition actually works better for larger clients than for the smaller brands, just based on the complexity that we're trying to solve for.
Makes sense. So, you know, the last 4 years have been insane for e-commerce, mostly good with, like you said, some pullback last year that thankfully we're really doing well coming out of that as well. So I'm grateful to hear that you guys are also doing well. But you know, something I've been thinking about a lot. I was talking to a friend of mine the other day who really is knee deep in this stuff also, like you and I are. And we talked about how the operating of an Amazon or e-commerce related brand is evolving to require more sophistication. And it used to be that oversimplified business models were the ones that got top multiples, and now we're having to solve more problems. And so I guess, yeah, actually, circle back to something we were talking about a minute ago, a little bit of like state of the union of logistics. But like, we can't get away with having such a simple, streamlined, we're going to have to do some of the logistics work. And I think that's one of the reasons my FBA prep has been so successful. But like, can you speak to that a little bit about how the landscape is evolving and where you see it sitting right now?
Yeah, I like to look at what's happening in logistics through the consumer's world. And so I would say that consumerism is driving innovation. Amazon has done something. They've got us addicted to this right now, I want my stuff faster drip, and we're hooked. And so as a result of that, you see a lot of expansion in things like last mile delivery options. And probably the biggest topic, which lots of the current innovation falls under, is increased use of technology. So that could be AI. I mean, this has nothing to do with logistics, but you see companies like ZonGuru using AI to really help you when it comes to creating your Amazon listing. Inside the warehouse, you have robotics. Like, robotics are getting much better at the picking and packing. You know, about 10, 20 years ago, the most sophisticated technology would be a picker. A picker in a warehouse is someone who goes and takes items off the shelf and puts them into a box. So a picker would be wearing a headset, and it looked like a Sony Walkman, and they'd have like a microphone on their waist, and they'd push a cart around, and an automated voice would tell them, "Go to aisle 4 and pick from shelf 5," and then they'd give a license plate number. And that seemed like super advanced. Like, I don't know how you could get any better than that. And now you have robotic carts that will go and do that, and all the picker has to do is grab the item off the shelf and put it on the cart, and then the cart keeps moving. You just got to follow it and keep up. So there's tons of innovation and advancement in terms of technology, but it all filters up to like getting things done more fast, like faster and more efficient all across the board. And then other things that we're seeing have to do with this ongoing, I don't even want to call it a trend, but this ongoing idea of being omni-channel. So I don't know, 5, 6 years ago, it started feeling like everyone's saying, "I don't want all my eggs in the Amazon basket. What if something happens to my Amazon account? What if, as you mentioned, Amazon wants to increase their storage fees to a point where I can't make money?" And right now, like February of 2024, we're looking at inbound Amazon shipment fees are going crazy. Basically, Amazon wants to split up your inventory so that you're paying to distribute it throughout the country, as opposed to you send it into one fulfillment center and then Amazon does an FC transfer, and it's, you know, the original fulfillment center gives you the inventory, so now you have inventory you can sell, but then they do an FC transfer and relocate your items so everyone in the country can get it according to the prime delivery. So yeah, all of this is happening at the same time, and when it comes to omni-channel, it feels like every year that continues, Amazon gets bigger, but also the threat, the existential threat of what if Amazon doesn't work for me any longer, also gets bigger. And so it used to be several years ago, our clients were saying, "Hey, we're really making a push to sell on our own website, so can you hold back 10% of the inventory we send you, and we're going to do direct-to-consumer fulfillment." And that's really part and parcel to our value proposition, which is like, wherever you're selling, we will be able to service you. We'll help you prep your goods for FBA, but we can also send your items out for direct to consumer. We'll also do your influencer packages or these special like value-added services, or if you want some bundling or kitting or seasonal stuff, Halloween or Christmas, we'll help make that. So from the beginning, we wanted to service our clients wherever they're selling. And I think the biggest, let's say, hot trend, hot topic you're going to hear about in 2024 is TikTok Shop. Mm-hmm. TikTok in 2023, $18 billion in ad revenue. And then it was actually the first non-gaming app to surpass $10 billion in consumer spending. So there's the ad revenue side and the consumer spending, which is, you know, buying all the stuff. I think everyone should prepare for TikTok Shop, but I don't think it's as new as people think, in the sense that this is part of the omni-channel shift, which is, how can I get some significant percentage of my revenue away from Amazon? Mm-hmm. So I think it's a little bit more of the same. It's just changed its name. It's gone from my own website or Shopify to TikTok, and that's big. And actually, TikTok is making it just about as easy as ever to get your items listed. And then from the warehouse's perspective, it is no different than a direct-to-consumer client, in the sense that most people just connect their TikTok to their Shopify store. So from the warehouse, it doesn't matter where the order is coming from. In fact, many warehouse applications can't even see where it's coming from. They just see that, hey, there's an order to be fulfilled. So TikTok's doing an awesome job of that, and it's quite easy from a warehouse perspective to meet those clients' needs.
So it's like, literally, seems like it's very similar to selling on a Shopify site. If you if you have a good logistics partner where dealing with the data sets is possible. A quick question, because I'm just ignorant of this. Can you currently use Amazon FBA to fulfill TikTok orders, or no?
Yes. As of today, you can. It looks like that will get more and more difficult, because Amazon doesn't want TikTok, which is the, let's say, one of maybe two or three real competitors that they have. They're conscious of letting that grow to be a harmful percentage. And I think the only reason there is, like, the intent that people have on Amazon is so high and so strong. And TikTok, I think there's almost no intent, but it's just like a checkout aisle purchase, right? It's completely, right. I wasn't on here to buy anything, but I liked what I was watching, and I'm gonna press two buttons with my thumb, and the whole thing's gonna be on its way to me. I mean, that's how simple e-commerce is right now. So that's good.
It's such a beautiful, you talk about, there's a lot of news right now about Amazon using more of its own internal AI to drive ads to specific avatars, right? Like, they already do this with keyword PPC stuff, but, you know, the idea that they're going to spend $110 million next year to have an NFL playoff game, but their ad strategy can be so targeted that they can actually charge closer to almost Super Bowl level ad rates to some of these big brands, because guess what? They can get you in front of a million people who actually want your product instead of masses on TV. And the other thing I see from Amazon that I think I find just really, really fascinating, I want to pivot back to something you mentioned earlier with the Amazon fees, is Amazon has a really consistent habit of building a huge moat by subsidizing its services. And here's what I mean by this. A lot of the FBA stuff was run at a pretty massive, like, if you follow the Bezos letters and the Amazon earnings reports, a lot of their bigger parts of the business were run at a loss intentionally to build a huge market share, capture a lot of, and so what we're seeing, and you mentioned one specific fee that's a real pain right now for a lot of our brands that we represent, is it used to be like, how come it is that I can't just send my whole 40-foot container to one FC receiving center and Amazon will just split it for me? And actually, if you do it some ways, you can still get them to do some of the splitting. But like, Amazon's trying to fight back against that subsidy. They don't want to subsidize our inventory shipments to different parts of the country anymore. And so they're removing that service. They're removing other services also. I think I heard something about here, maybe in the next couple of months, an additional pick and pack repacking fee for excessive refunds in certain categories might be coming out here in June. I think I heard that. And my point is that Amazon is incentivizing us to own a little bit more of the value chain. It's more of what you said a minute ago, Taylor. We can't have all of our eggs in the Amazon basket, not because Amazon is not a good opportunity, but because Amazon is going to continue using its weight in the market to not lose money in that side of its own business. And so you can always count on Amazon to act in its own best interest. That's something, and it loves customers, And so this kind of takes us to maybe what I wanted to ask you about, kind of the core question for today is, okay, what does it look like now in this current ecosystem? Getting Amazon FBA refunds dealt with is getting harder. Sending product in now costs me more to get it sent to different parts of the country, to different FCs. It might be time to get serious about owning a little bit more of my own logistics. And I don't mean going out and buying a warehouse, although for some brands they need to do that. Like, what are you, that's maybe this is a little bit of an addendum to the State of the Union question I have for you is, are you starting to see the economics of storing pick, pack, shipping units from one of your warehouses? Are we starting to get closer to parity with FBA, or is there still a pretty large chasm for most brands when it comes to price per parcel?
I think the way to answer that is that Amazon continues to be the best marketplace in the world to sell on, bar none. And so the decision is not, do we continue with Amazon or do we diversify? It's almost assumed everything should be done and moving forward on Amazon. Now, how can a brand reconcile the increased fees to sell on Amazon with their costs, let's say costs of goods sold, staying the same or increasing as well?
That's right.
So you're saying let's shrink this parity. I think one of the answers that we would say is getting smarter and better at warehousing. So I'll give you some basic examples that make a lot of sense for everyone. Usually it's more complicated than this, but I'll give you two examples. One would be having inventory spread across the country that before it hits Amazon. So some clients will alternate which port in the US they're sending their inventory in. And that doesn't seem to make any sense at all, but hang with me for a second. So if I send to the port of Miami in January and my next shipment is in May and I send it to the port of Los Angeles and I'm using my FBA prep warehouses to receive that, which are in both places. So what you're doing is you're locking in the volume rate with my FBA prep because we're going to view both of those shipments as just you, the customer. So you're kind of getting credit for that, which keeps your price low. That's the point there. And then your inventory is originating in one case from Florida and in another case from California. So you're actually preempting the inventory splits from Amazon, assuming that you have a lot of inventory in the warehouses. Now, it's not a perfect model at all, but what you'll see is you'll see the ones from Miami are staying in the Southeast, hopefully, maybe going as far up to New Jersey to service the Northeast where there's a lot of population. And then assuming you're reordering when you have, I don't know, 20% inventory, 30% inventory by the time your inventory lands. Now, when it hits California, hopefully you're going to get the West Coast, maybe Nevada, maybe Dallas fulfillment centers as the farthest ones away. And that's one way to try and be a little bit smarter about it. The other thing you can do just from an outset to get a cost savings is using one warehouse that can fulfill Amazon, so FBA, FBM, D2C, your website sales, or B2B if you're in retailers. And again, our value proposition works best for the bigger clients, not because they're big inherently, but because big clients have multiple platforms that they sell on. So a big client will use us for FBA prep, they'll use us for their website orders, direct to consumer, and they'll use us to send inventory to a retailer like Costco or Best Buy, Nordstrom Rack, we've done if you're in the apparel space. So that's where you get the cost savings of, hey, we're sending everything to one warehouse, and they're doing all of the work. And what's interesting is a lot of times when we win clients, they're like we had a supplement company that was working, their largest sales channel was Costco. And when they started working with us for Amazon alone, they were doing six truckloads a week of one SKU. Okay, so super high volume. And we were only servicing their Amazon business. And then what we try to do as a logistics and a warehouse provider is say, hey, what would it look like if you were to send 12 trucks a week and we hold six of them for direct to consumer? And so that's one way that we try and grow the account from our perspective, which services us. But what we're telling the client, which is true, is, hey, we're going to reduce your costs. We're going to give you a volume discount. If you work with us, you're already sending 6 trucks. If you double that, let's see what we can do to reduce your rates. And now you're being a bit smarter. So there's this funny saying, which is like, to a hammer, every problem is a nail. And so you've asked me about, well, what should a company do if the Amazon fees are creeping up on them? And because I'm in warehousing, I'm telling you, find a warehouse that saves you money, of course. But that's just what I know, right? What I know how to do is help clients get smarter and better and save money on warehousing with a better solution. And so that is my answer. But I think that, as you alluded to, companies are having to pay a lot more attention to the non-Amazon platform areas. So not sales and marketing, but supply chain, what they're paying for their inventory, what those relationships look like. And lastly, I'll say, because of your background, one thing we're seeing our biggest clients do is, and you mentioned this, everything comes down to being a people business. They're managing their relationships with their vendors to extend out the terms, which is one way to, it's obviously good for cash flow, but it's one way to deal with, if you're seeing increased costs, you're like, I can still make it work, but if I had more time to pay my suppliers, then everything, you know, like the numbers work out much better than if I owe that money sooner, which maybe isn't going to happen if your costs are increased on Amazon. So that's something that I've been surprised to learn about, because I'm not so much on the finance side or certainly on the inventory and supplier relationship side. But when I've met with the clients in person at the warehouses, I'm surprised to see how our biggest clients are often talking about that as being really crucial to their business. Whereas people starting out, maybe they don't have that. They're not ordering enough to get those terms with their suppliers, or they just haven't thought of it yet. So hopefully that's a nugget for people who want to pick it up.
It's really, really good. And you mentioned something important. Is that the hammer nail illustration is always really funny. But the reality is there are still kind of two core pillar variables that drive whether we can get good ROI. And we're investing in inventory, by the way. So we're investing in inventory and we want to make money. We have to, or that's the price of admission. And, you know, it's a lot sexier sometimes, Taylor, to talk about like marketing tactics and let's find an influencer to blow up on TikTok. And that's important, by the way. And we need to have those discussions. But guys, like, reliably not just getting quality products to our customer, but giving us that data set that can help us. Because by the way, one of the ways to pull money out of your supply chain is to have better data related to where your money is sitting. If I know it's sitting here versus here, then I can wait an extra week before I reorder because I've got better analytics. I know where the inventory is. And to your point, the more I understand my supply chain and the economics of it, kind of the more I can be a partner to my suppliers. And I encourage our clients heavily, don't spend 90% of your time working on marketing problems and don't invest in your supplier relationships. The time to ask for relief on those terms is not when you're in the fetal position at 2:30 in the morning praying you can make a wire the next day. It's like 6 months earlier, right? And so
yeah,
I think having the right logistics, the right level of sophistication is imperative. In fact, it's like one half of the equation. If I can take a product that has moderate margins and I can double the cash velocity, in other words, I get to use that same dollar over and over again because I can turn that inventory more quickly. Not only does that save me interest because I'm not having to borrow money in a really high interest rate environment, but it actually just makes my business healthier in general. I don't have piles of stuff in different corners of my warehouse and my garage. My mom's house doesn't have stuff. I actually just have a clean operation where instead of warehousing, I'm doing what Amazon always talks about, which is just, you know, throughput, fulfillment centers, making things go through as quickly as possible. And so I think this is a really important discussion. Let me ask you this, just kind of a broad kind of catch-all question here before we pivot here with this interview, but like anything else that you think of that's like, man, tactically, I think if I were running my 7 or 8 figure brand right now online, I would really be concerned about this, or I would really make sure I lean into this over the course of 2024. Anything pop into your head when I kind of drop that question on you?
Yes. Strategic inventory management. So another one of our mutual friends, Chelsea, who you've had on the podcast from SoStock, she's a co-founder there. They do a phenomenal job of giving sellers a solution. And I think the way Amazon sellers would talk about SoStock as a software is, oh, it's a real-time system that tells you when you need to reorder. Now, that's from the inventory standpoint. But what it does for your business from the finance standpoint, I think matters much, much more, which is you're only putting your money into the inventory that's going to turn the fastest. Therefore, you're getting to reuse that dollar and so on and so forth. And the bigger your business becomes, the more pressure there is on your finances, right? You have more financial commitments and it becomes much more important, the strategic inventory management. And so again, from our clients that we see, the people who are doing it the best, the people who seem like they're really on top of it, and you know, we have some insight into their sales data and sales information based on what they send to us and how often they send it. Man, they are so tight with inventory management and they're so on top of it. And the idea now is to find a software, whether it's algorithmically based, whether it's AI enhanced, where it helps you in real time based on today's sales velocity. So what most sellers, myself included, start out with is a spreadsheet saying, if I sold 10 units today and I sell on average 10 units a day for 30 days, how long will my inventory last? And you do it like that. The you know, at scale, the complexity is much, much greater than that. And so getting a tool that helps predict your inventory management, and then you go, you know, one step back, which is like, well, how long from when I place my order to when I get it delivered? And then right. You say, and how much time do I have to add for it to be prepped and sent into Amazon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that 7- and 8-figure brands, I know they have individuals at the large agencies, at the umbrella holding companies, who this is all they do.
Yep.
All they do is inventory management, and they're using tools to inform their decisions, but it is such a critical part of the business to get that right. And we see the results of both the positive and the negative within the warehouse. The negative, just like at Amazon, is they send a bunch of inventory to our warehouses that they don't really need right now. And so they're going to have to pay to store it, which is probably one of the worst uses of your money that you could imagine, because it's costing you to not turn your dollar as many times as possible in a year. The opposite of that, of course, is people who send in inventory, 80, 90, 100% of it goes into Amazon, and then they pay no storage fees at our warehouses. They have very little storage fees at Amazon because it's moving quick enough. Mm-hmm. And then they rinse and repeat that cycle. And that's just a healthy cash flow cycle in a really well-tuned business.
A quick war story that's will kind of drive this point home, because everything you said was perfect there, Taylor. I have a client, really smart guy, 8-figure seller, been in the game a long time, and doesn't have Chelsea's solution, has a really, really bad inventory management tool, to be honest with you. Very complex, some kitting, some multifaceted inventory challenges that he's wrestling with. And boy, can I tell you, as a CFO, it is challenging. This guy spends a lot of money. He's not trying to half-ass his inventory management. Mm-hmm. He just has the wrong tool and the wrong team in place. And as a result, I believe we got to the end of the last year, and he's now looking at me like, hey, I can't believe I'm having to write off something like $700,000 in inventory, which turns all of that advice, Tyler, that you and your team gave me this year into not good advice. You know, in other words, the not only do you get to have better return on working capital because you can use that dollar over and over again, you don't have to order as quickly, but actually having really good inventory visibility is the only way to fully validate your profit and loss statement as a seller. Because at the end of the day, the backstop is the inventory count. You give me a figure and it turns out a year and a half later, that figure's been off by $1 million, which, by the way, this is not an isolated incident. It's happened with other mm-hmm. clients. You're looking at a situation where all of the strategic choices you've made related to pricing, related to multi-channel expansion, related to marketing, have been predicated on baloney. And so I do think that this is really important. And just to kind of put a fine point on that, if you're a 7- or 8-figure brand owner or beyond that, and you don't have an internal inventory czar, and you haven't implemented a really high quality inventory management system for your use case, Boy, I just think that might be some of the best energy you could expend here in the first couple of quarters of 2024, because getting that wrong as fees get a little tighter and as we got to figure out TikTok, we got to figure out China. There's also stuff we got to figure out, but if I don't understand like actual margins, I'm guessing, that's terrifying. That terrifies me, Taylor. And I just hope people will take that advice that you're giving them so clearly and run with that. Anything final on that before we pivot here for the conversation?
No, I think that's very well said.
Okay. So I do want to end this conversation like I end all of these interviews and just ask you, man, like, listen, we're promising people a return on their investment. They're listening to 30 plus minutes of this show. That's a big investment. Like, what is something you're doing, a practice, hack, habit, rhythm that's giving you what you would say is an outrageous ROI in your life?
Yeah. Because I've been on the show before, I knew you were going to ask this question. And I said, man, Tyler always gets me with that. I never know what to say. And I just made a mental note, like think about it over the next few days. And then at night, I went to write in my journal and it just hit me. I was like, this is what I have to talk about. So, as I've gotten busier and busier, I've returned to the most simple, most fundamental things. And so my recommendation for the listeners, two books, very similar. Gary Keller's The One Thing. And Greg McKeown, I'm not saying his name right, but Essentialism.
Love it.
And the one thing encourages you to ask yourself this question every single day: what's the one thing I can do such that by doing it, everything else will be easier or unnecessary? And I think that what I've tried to do is schedule all my calls for after lunch and give myself as much time as possible in the morning to do my one thing. And the one thing is typically the hardest thing. It typically requires deep work. And if you're a taskmaster or a box checker like I am, it's so counterintuitive because I want to check off as many tasks as possible in a day. But the reality is, the ones you can check off in 10 minutes, 30 minutes are often the least important. And the one thing or the essential thing is always going to require more time than the quick tasks. And so it's counterintuitive. Some people call it eating the frog. There's 100 different books that all say the same thing, or people who will advise this strategy. But it's what I've turned to in 2024. We're in February, so I'm longer staying with it longer than the gym goers, right? But I have returned to essentialism. I have returned to the one thing to try and go deep on the things that matter and try as much as possible to forget everything else.
Love it. There is a paradox, friends, in what he just said. I love both those books, The One Thing by Gary Keller and Essentialism by, I always mess up his name, McKeown as well. A good, great guy. Well, I'll make sure my team puts the links in the show notes. But the paradox is that going from six figures to seven figures and going from seven figures to eight figures or eight figures to nine figures, whatever the growth trajectory you're on, the strange paradox is you can't do more things well. You have to do fewer things with excellence. You've got to be elite at a few things and carving out time to do that deeper work. Cal Newport's book on deep work is another one I would recommend, just kind of tossing that in there. But do you, that block of time that's going to require more RAM, more energy, more thought, but it's going to give you the 10x return on investment, like Gary Keller's book talks about, will make other things irrelevant, make them unnecessary, will get you further faster. Man, that's great advice. That's really, really good advice, Taylor. I really appreciate you bringing that. Anything else for the let me just give you a second here. We've talked a lot about my FBA prep. You've done a good job of kind of helping people understand how you guys are evolving. But somebody out there that might listen to this particular episode, what are they feeling right now that should trigger them to reach out to you and learn more about your services at my FBA prep?
If you don't love your warehouse or supply chain or logistics provider, if that's the area of your business, which you say, I'm really great at sales, I like marketing, I know Amazon well, but man, those guys just can't get it right. That's typically when we like to hear from people. Sometimes the phone call to my partner Tom, who handles all the sales, it feels like the person you speak to when you walk in the emergency room. And you just dump your problems on them, like here's what's happening. Can you fix it quick? We like that. You know, that's where we say, okay, well, here's the problem. This is where they're at now. We think we can do much better than that. So when I meet people in person and they're complaining about their 3PLs or their prep relationships, I always say, man, what a missed opportunity to do something really, really well. And that goes with all sorts of vendors that you might have as an e-commerce seller or any business. But as important as inventory management is, as important as prep is to any business that sells on Amazon, you should find a vendor that you love, whether it's MyFBA Prep or someone else. So if you don't love your vendor and if there's delays, you say, I ordered in time, I know how long it takes me to manufacture my product and to get it to my warehouse, but I didn't foresee the warehouse taking 2 weeks to prep it. I thought it would be 2 days. Yep. That's the kind of thing that when people call in and they talk to Tom, that's where we say, give us a shot. Love sometimes, I probably shouldn't be saying this, sometimes without even a contract in place, we say, hey, when's your next shipment coming in? Okay, we're going to send it to this warehouse and let's watch together. You know, we do a lot of that, I would call it human-based business, where we're just saying, hey, Tyler, I think I can help you here. If you're open for it, this is what I'm going to charge you. Send it to this warehouse and let's both watch and see what happens. Let's see if we can get that turned around really, really quickly and you can be amazed or happy. And I do want to share one last point on that. There's always so much changing. But I think the most important things don't change. And so from a warehouse perspective, I often find myself saying two things over and over again. Number one, you should spend your time managing your business, sales, marketing, finance, et cetera, inventory management, supply chain, you should probably outsource. The other thing I find myself saying all the time is like, yeah, people ask us, hey, do you have a software that's going to reduce the cost to ship inbound? Do you use this software? I don't want to name too many names. And yeah, a lot of our warehouses will do that. But the most important thing that we can offer is what we call a world-class white glove customer service from our account management team, headed by Covey Hayden, who's just a godsend. And if you can't pick up the phone and call your warehouse and ask somebody to go look at the inventory, then you have the wrong partner. You know, people will land $1 million of inventory at a warehouse and they don't have the phone number of the person who's responsible for prepping that. It doesn't make any sense to me. So just some things to think about, but thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share that.
Taylor, that's such a good word. Friends, Taylor Smith's co-founder, myfbaprep.com. We're going to make sure all of your links are in the show notes here, Taylor, so they can reach out to your team should they feel that feeling. I'm not in love with my logistics. I feel like it's a necessary evil I have to put up with. Maybe you don't. Maybe there's an opportunity for you to improve the flow of money, inventory, lower the headache factor in your logistics. And if that's you, I do encourage you to reach out to Taylor. I love working with people, Taylor, that get the elite technology, elite execution, coupled with the fact that we're still in human business. And so for what it's worth, guys, I highly recommend Taylor's company for those reasons. So, dude, thank you so much for joining us today on Return on Podcast. Very much appreciate your time.
It's always a pleasure, Tyler. Great catching up with you.
And for those of you guys, again, that have made it through this interview, we hope you glean something. We hope this is valuable to you. Your time is valuable. Your business needs you to be at your best. We hope Return on Podcast gives you some nuggets that can help you get there. Until we see you next week, take care and kill it. Cheers.